profesor, nada más rapidito. Si alguien quiere adquirir su libro, ¿dónde lo podemos encontrar? ¿O cómo se puede adquirir o pedir por internet? ¿O cómo tener su material?
Sí, yo creo que en Amazon seguramente está el de Hormigas Rojas, porque Editorial Almadía es una editorial muy importante en México. Y también hay un libro que ese sí lo van a conseguir seguramente en Amazon también, que en realidad es una antología de un cuento mío que se llama Hormigas Rojas. Y el libro, la antología del libro se llama México 20, Nueva Narrativa Mexicana.
México 20, Nueva Narrativa Mexicana, y por Amazon. Okay, porque yo imagino que muchos de nuestros radioescuchas querrán saber dónde encontrar este material tan profundo y tan bonito. Profesor, ha sido un gusto y un placer haberle escuchado y haber platicado con usted.
Muy bien. Cualquier cosa, estamos en comunicación. Saludos a todos.
Un abrazo, profe.
Gracias, gracias, Pergentino.
Les damos un profundo agradecimiento a todos los radioescuchas, la verdad, que nos han sintonizado esta noche, y a los que nos siguen en vivo en nuestro canal de Senderos de Oaxaca en YouTube.
En la edición de esta noche escuchamos la melodía de la autoría de Gavino Palomares, La Maldición de Malinche, compuesta en 1975, y tuvimos también al profesor Pergentino José Ruiz, narrador y poeta del estado de Oaxaca.
Y nuestros agradecimientos bien profundos por el apoyo a nuestras compañeras y compañeros de la Asociación de Programadores y Programadoras en Español de la KPFK, al coordinador de piso.
Al coordinador de piso tenemos al compañero comandante, al técnico en controles, tenemos a quien...
A Lice Tapia.
En la cámara, a nuestro compañero Toshlis y al compañero...
Ricardo
Núñez.
Queremos invitarlos a que nos sigan en Facebook, en Senderos de Oaxaca, en Senderos KPFK 90.7 FM, y también por nuestro canal Senderos de Oaxaca en YouTube. Y no se retire, continuamos en Contragolpe, y para el próximo miércoles, Roberto.
A esta misma hora, sintonice Así es Nuestra Cultura, y recuerden, hoy se cumplen 524 años de resistencia de nuestras comunidades, de los pueblos originarios. Buenas noches y hasta la próxima.
Buenas noches.
Esto fue Senderos de Oaxaca.
Desde lo más profundo de nuestras raíces y nuestras prácticas tradicionales.
¿Sugerencias y comentarios?
Visite nuestra página de Facebook.
El hombre que tiene algo que decir se desespera al no encontrar oyentes, pero es más desalentador para el escucha el no encontrar a alguien que tenga algo que decirle.
Este es KPFK 90.7 FM Los Ángeles, 98.7 FM Santa Bárbara, 93.7 FM San Diego, 99.5 FM Ridgecrest, China Lake, y por todo el mundo en kpfk.org.
KPFK.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott, back in studio. Hurricane, a wide swath across the Caribbean region, hitting Cuba, Jamaica, the Bahamas, but also hardest hit, Haiti. And now it has hit the coast of Florida, where one death so far has been reported. In Haiti, however, a Category 3 storm with more than 120 mile per hour winds hit Haiti, killing over 478 people, and that number is still rising. 350,000 people thus far are in need of assistance. Today, we discuss the impact.
Friday, October 14th, save the date. Free Radio Santa Cruz will throw a memorable party. We will celebrate our 21 years of broadcasting for our community. Come join us. We will have a night of music with our beloved Coffee Zombie Collective.
Here we go! Coffee Zombies in the house tonight. Everybody just have a good time.
And a little one? Some are grooving with the funk, soul, and the rock of Dizziak. So come have a drink, sing along, dance around, have fun. This fundraising party will be at a great place. No need to tell you about the great place, right? A great bar, a great venue. So, save the date, October 14th. It's a Friday. Plan to join a bunch of pirates who made history on the airwaves.
And next up on Free Radio Santa Cruz, yes, it's Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. That's 2 hours of me talking at you and playing lots of recorded material from the last week or 2 weeks. So stay with us. We're going to be covering the Cannabis Advocates Alliance meeting on Monday, the Homelessness Forum last night, a bunch of stuff before that, and your phone calls at 427-3772 if you choose to call in. Seem to be having a momentary computer difficulty. Don't go away.
Friday, October 14th. Save the date. Free Radio Santa Cruz will throw a memorable party. We will celebrate our 21 years of broadcasting for our community. Come join us. We will have a night of music with our beloved Coffee Zombie Collective.
Here we go! Coffee Zombies in the house tonight. Everybody just have a good time.
And a little one? Some are grooving with the funk, soul, and the rock of Dizziak. So come have a drink. Sing along, dance around, have fun. This fundraising party will be at a great place. No need to tell you about the great place, right? A great bar, a great venue. So, save the date, October 14th. It's a Friday. Plan to join a bunch of pirates who made history on the airwaves.
And that's tomorrow night, folks, in case you want to jump on board at the Great Place. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and coming up for the next 2 hours, it's that old favorite, one of my favorites anyway, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. That's the name of my show. Special guest Mike Jolson in the studio, crammed into our little shoebox here. He's going to give us an update on the California Cannabis Hemp Initiative. No, it's not Proposition 64. It's the Hemp Initiative for 2018. He's going to explain why this is better than that. But don't go away.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
Hi there, caller. You're on the air. Say hello to your fans. Thanks, Dennis. Dennis. He's often a soft-spoken fellow. And our equipment is sort of rudimentary tonight, as am I. But in the studio with me, I actually have a live human being. We'll see if we can get him to educate us on a number of issues, most specifically the issue of the upcoming and widely ballyhooed Proposition 64. Let's see here. I've gotten two websites here. We're talking with Mike Jolson. And Mike is someone who's been working on making herb legal or uncriminal, or I don't know how you'd put it, something like that, for the last decade at least, right?
Oh, yes, for about 20-something years.
And you actually, when I asked you how you were going to describe yourself on this show, you said you were the proponent of the California Cannabis Hemp Initiative 2018. I knew there were a bunch of initiatives kind of vying for the ballot, and only one made it, the one that is Proposition 64. I guess, I'm not sure I'll take the positive or the negative approach first. What you actually have, is 2018 actually been written, the hemp initiative? Is it sort of a one that we've seen before?
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you for the opportunity, Robert, to be on the show, and thanks for anyone listening to the radio and actually online.
We're having a little problem here with the mic here. Let's see if I can do this. Say something, Mike.
Okay, cheese.
Louder.
Cheese.
That's good and closer.
Okay, hello.
That's even better.
Awesome.
That's good. Okay, so I'm not sure why our mics are as low as they are, but we're going to try to hike them up a little bit. Looks like they're major hiked as it is. So, yeah, is this proposition that you're thinking of, the one that we don't have on the ballot, what is it, and have we seen it before?
Yeah, this proposition that you saw us this winter out circulating is the real deal, the legalized cannabis without any hidden agendas. And it was authored by, as some know, Jack Herer. Jack Herer, the author of The Emperor Wears No Clothes, who unfortunately left the earth April 15th in 2010. So we are carrying on Jack Herer's political movement to completely end the prohibition of cannabis and of hemp without an overarching Big Brother control as being proposed by the initiative of which is on the ballot that we'll talk about.
And I guess you were circulating, I think I saw you out there circulating a petition.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't make it for some reason.
Yes. So you saw us out. We started almost about a year ago from today. We started right before Halloween, actually on Halloween, and we had through April 20th to circulate the petition. So you saw us out there. A lot of folks throughout the California, we are the biggest legalization group in the state by far, and we were out circulating before any other petition was even out. And there was really only one that made the streets, that made it on the street, and that was the one that unfortunately did qualify. So oh, yeah, we were out.
At one point, there were four of them, right?
Well, yeah, there was over about 15 or 16 that were filed, but they were all more smoking mirrors. None of them were actually serious about going out to circulate the petition if they didn't have the money, whereas we were serious about circulating the petition knowing that we could get the money if we fought hard enough.
And how many signatures did you get, and how much money did you get, how far?
Well, that's a great question. We turned in under 10,000 throughout the state. We turned in to, I believe, around 30 counties in the state, but we estimate, you know, if we would have gotten back all the signatures that we put out, all the paper, especially from the professionals that were carrying it, we estimate 300,000 to 400,000 that we actually probably got. And that's because, you know, we sent, you know, 700,000 to 800,000 signatures out to all across the state.
Need how many to qualify for the ballot?
Well, in California, we're at a 10-year low or at a 20-year low with the amount of signatures you need to get on the ballot. It might even be 30-year low, but we needed 402,000 to qualify, but you really need around 365,000 if you file within a certain deadline. We filed for the late deadline, which is the partial count. So we needed 402,000 roughly. So to get 402,000, you need to gross around 800,000. signatures, or around 750,000. So we are a grassroots organization, and unfortunately, our focus failed with raising the money, and that's in essence why we didn't make the ballot, was because we didn't have the money.
So the folks who did make the ballot, the Proposition 64 folks, I guess, you know, if we'd been talking a few months ago, it would be more relevant, the kinds of questions I'm asking you now, like, you know, what are the differences between the initiatives that people are trying to present, how much money is required, what's the difference in the organizations backing them. But right now, as you know, people are going to have a choice in early November between the horror show and the real horror show, both horror shows for the president, if you're looking at the main party candidates. And third-party candidates who are, you know, Jill Stein, Gary Johnson. But they're also looking, most people are saying, you know, screw the candidates, although possibly do the vote pact thing, which you probably heard about, which is you get somebody who hates Trump as much as you hate Clinton to agree that you're both going to cast a ballot for a third party. And that way you raise the third-party ballot total, but you don't worry about electing the other worst candidate. And I always have been pushing that for the last couple of shows because I like the idea. If you want to, you know, get anywhere with electoral politics at all, you have been involved a lot in electoral politics. And what is relevant in California is that numerous propositions are on the ballot, which the one we're talking about tonight is Proposition 64. Tell us a little bit about Proposition 64.
Thank you. Well, Proposition 64 is the model of corporatism. It is... It was an initiative authored by the 1%, by George Soros, and by Sean Parker, and they circumvented the larger cannabis reform movement and are trying to shove this proposition down our throat without consulting some of the people that helped start the cannabis movement, especially the people like Dennis Perrone, who wrote Proposition 215. So they, in essence... The people that funded this is, they had this plan all along, is to write this law, and they circumvented the whole cannabis reform movement by because they could have basically supported one of the many different initiatives filed, which were far better.
Tell us what this, you know, be more specific. Well, let me be more specific. I'll read what proponents of Proposition 64 say it does, and you can tell me if you agree, and what thoughts you have about their claims. This is a measure that's supposedly based on recognized best practices to control, regulate, and tax responsible adult use, sale, and cultivation of marijuana in California. Just any comments about that opening phrase?
They have good phrases, but most of it, everything that they give, they take away. So they're saying they're going to give something, but they're going to take that away. And one of them is that it basically criminalizes medical marijuana again. Under Prop 64, it actually punishes a physician if they recommend cannabis. So what they're effectively doing is they're going to create felons out of patients, because most patients in California won't even be able to get a doctor's note anymore. So their goal is to make, they being George Soros and the people that finance this, they want 6 plant per household gardens only, and no more medical marijuana gardens whatsoever. And along with the 6 plant garden per house, that means 6 plants per house, you have to agree, at least in some counties, to allow law enforcement to come in and inspect your 6 plant garden at 24/7 without a notice. So this is what the 1% is trying to shove down our throats.
What do you mean in some counties? Are counties specified in this ordinance, or are they giving just counties the option to activate this part of the ordinance?
Yeah, they give the counties the option to basically tax cannabis without limits, to levy unlimited taxes, and the counties that actually ban outdoor cultivation under Prop 64, it would allow one person to grow 6 plants, but then you have to basically allow the law enforcement to come at any point and inspect your garden. So it's warrantless searches. And, you know, part of why I was here tonight was because we're going to go through this with a fine-tooth comb this Saturday night in Santa Cruz with Dennis Perrone, the author of Prop 215, and others. So we're going to
explain what 215 is before.
Okay. Dennis Perrone and John Entwistle and a handful of others authored Valerie Carrell, The Compassionate Use Act, which was written, you know, written by Dennis and out of the Castro in the San Francisco gay movement that was struck with AIDS. So Dennis authored Prop 215 with to be as liberal as it could possibly be.
This
so
was
that,
back in 1996.
Back in 19. So and this this initiative is most know it was as liberal as it could basically possibly get, because it was written by Dennis and the gay community, and that this their initiative was not going to make the ballot, but it wasn't till George Soros and a handful of other investors literally rescued it and paid for it to make the ballot. So I give props to George Soros for and the others like George Zimmer and George Zimmerman who gave us Prop 215 the money, so it made the ballot and won. But the problem is that these same socioeconomic forces won't fund initiatives like Prop 215 and instead are writing their own, which is going to instill a draconian form of regulation.
So let me look a little bit further about what the website yeson64.org has. That's what I'm looking at. It says adults age 21 or over will be allowed to possess marijuana and grow small amounts at home, as you were saying, for personal use. Sale of marijuana will be legal and highly regulated to protect consumers and kids. A comment?
Comment is, yeah, because highly regulated. Now, I want for the audience to know and the people that might be tuning in now online or in the future is that, that Prop 64 here in California is modeled on prohibition. It's modeled on the Jim Crow reefer madness attitude that marijuana is harmful, it's toxic, we have to highly control and highly regulate it. So Dr. Lyman is one of the proponents of this initiative, and Dr. Lyman has said marijuana is harmful, it's addictive, and that their initiative is a way to control it. So this initiative, Prop 64, was basically written by people who hate marijuana, probably don't even smoke it, and this is what we're calling controlled prohibition. There, it's not really legalizing it, because you still go to jail if you grow more than six plants and if you possess more than an ounce, but there, it's a way that the people that made it illegal, the 1%, can control and profit and keep the arrest and keep people in jail. This is a great point. The point is that these...
Sorry, I had my mic down when I said that. I asked Mike, in case you didn't hear me, if control is a bad thing, would you suggest decontrol of the alcohol business? Go ahead.
You hit it right on the head. The issue is, how is this going to be regulated? And our initiative, the California Hemp Initiative, feels that cannabis should be regulated like beer and wine, and no more onerous, no more harsh or restrictive than beer and wine. Prop 64 wants to regulate recreational cannabis like big tobacco and hard liquor, and they want to make it like OxyContin, so that they want to make it extremely hard so that doctors cannot even recommend it. And if doctors recommend it, they will be penalized, they will lose their license, they will be fined. So Prop 64 is effectively dispossessing our rights to medical cannabis in California, because it's saying that we can no longer go to a doctor to get cannabis for you know, depression, for anxiety, for sleep disorders. We have to go through our primary caregiver, and our primary caregiver is going to be extremely reluctant to issue a recommendation under their plan, because they want to root out the doctors that are recommending cannabis, just like it's a modern witchcraft trial.
So in other words, are you saying that there'll be a change? Right now, doctors, of course, can't write prescriptions for marijuana because it's Schedule 1 on the big list of baddies on the federal list. Plus, I guess it hasn't made the goodies on any kind of state list other except it has been sort of decriminalized under Proposition 215 in 1996. But what's my question here before I lose my way? What's going to happen? I know there's an issue about folks who are currently in jail for the crime of possessing, trafficking, transporting, growing, etc., marijuana, even with the medical marijuana allowance in play in California. Is that going to change one way or another? And if so, how? Under 64.
64 claims that if some felonies are reduced to misdemeanors, but the problem is that they are making patients, hundreds of thousands of patients are going to become felons because they can no longer grow or be protected under Prop 215. So anything they're going to give us, they're going to take it away. That meaning that if you're a cannabis farmer and you have more than six plants per house under Prop 64, you are a felon. It explicitly says you go to jail up to 6 months if you have more than six plants in 1 ounce. So while the people that authored this do reduce some penalties, it creates more because it's going to literally make cannabis patients felons that are growing more than six plants and possessing more than an ounce.
Now, do you mean, Mike, you mean felons or do you mean people who are subject to misdemeanors? Felons are, serious crimes where you go to prison. Misdemeanors, you go to county jail usually for up to a year.
Yeah, no, felons, because if you look at the law, there's all kinds of new penalties. And again, we are going to go through this at the Loudon Nelson Saturday from 6 to 9. And part of this new prohibition is you definitely get jail time under Prop 64. And part of this new form of prohibition is that all noncompliant growers will then be fined up to $35,000 a day or more. And under Prop 64, it encourages snitches from the city, the county, and the state. If they bring in noncompliant growers, they can make a bounty off money, goods confiscated by noncompliant growers. So it's a way that they, the 1%, can basically, force out small and medium farmers. And if we can address the taxation of it, under Prop 64, the money doesn't go into the general fund. It goes into its own fund for enforcement, of which they dole out, some to this communities and some to this communities. They're trying to buy out poor communities by giving, some money here and money there. But then what it does is, under Prop 64, it creates this marijuana enforcement bureaucracy that the governor, the next governor in 2018, is going to run. And that most likely will be Gavin Newsom. And once this marijuana bureaucracy that they're creating doles out all the money it says it will, it then will become this billion-dollar bureaucracy that can do basically with whatever. It's a slush fund that Gavin Newsom's going to be running. And he has supposedly ambitions of running for president in 2024. So some are speculating that Prop 64 is nothing more than a slush fund for Gavin Newsom to basically run for president and to dole out all this. It's what Bernie Sanders is calling dark money. It's dark money politics. It's them creating these bureaucracies. And
well, it sounds a little, I think you're stretching the argument. You may be true about Newsom, I don't know. But again, I'm trying to look at the language. I'm not even looking at the language of the ordinance. I'm looking at what the proponents of 64, what do they call it? What's their name for this act? The marijuana?
It's called the Adult Use of Marijuana Act.
Thank you. Yeah, the other things that they claim that will, come to fruition under this law protects workers, small businesses, law enforcement, local communities, will save the state tens of millions annually in reduced taxpayer costs, presumably from enforcement of marijuana laws against recreational users, and raise up to $1 billion in new tax revenues annually. Majority of the revenues will be allocated to teen drug treatment and prevention, training law enforcement to recognize driving under the influence of drugs, protecting the environment from the harms of illegal marijuana cultivation. I wonder if they're not wondering about the harms of corn cultivation. Or, I mean, it's interesting how this is different than other agricultural products, that there's somehow...
Again, this is based on neo-prohibition. It's based on, by the people that wrote it, Dr. Lyman said marijuana is toxic, it's harmful, it's highly addictive. So this is Big Brother's way of basically taking a hold of it.
It looks like a lot of this is money to law enforcement and to the kind of the drug demonization industry. I mean, it's, you know, the drug prevention and treatment, it's you know, it'd be nice for those who want to be treated for different kinds of addictions, and that's always helpful. But there's been a huge industry built on forced treatment that has gotten, you know, all kinds of stuff and all kinds of mileage in this country. And we're talking about heroin and methadone and cocaine and all these other substances that are also criminalized. And there's no injection or inhalation centers, places where people can go to use these things, as there are in a few countries that are beginning to, you know, take action around those new solutions, like Vancouver and Canada, and I guess Portugal has completely decriminalized drugs in small quantities, including, you know, very serious drugs. I think it's what, for up to a week or 10 days supply, something like that. I was reading a newspaper article earlier today. It also says Proposition 64, this argument from the Yes on 64, includes strict anti-monopoly provisions and protects small farmers, so California's marijuana industry isn't overrun by mega corporations. And I guess they're referring to some provision that stalls large corporations from coming in for 6 or 7 years or something.
That is all lies, because the model that they have under 64, they want to tax it from the grower to the buyer about 60%. So they are completely, I forgot what the media term is, it's language that they're using to twist on us. It is not going to protect small growers. It's going to, because the loops that they want to regulate it, because see what's going, there's a state bill that was signed by Governor Brown called the MRSA bill. And the MRSA bill is the real, you know, dagger in the heart of medical cannabis. And that was signed by Governor Brown, who supposedly doesn't like Gavin Newsom. So this is all politics between Newsom and Governor Brown. But MRSA, signed by Governor Brown, effectively destroys Prop 215 and SB 420. Because it takes away the doctor's right to recommend cannabis, and it destroys the collective model and replaces it with a for-profit model. So the backers of MRSA know that it's unconstitutional, because Californians voted for that we can get a doctor's note if we have a headache, if we have sleep anxiety, if we are depressed. And MRSA takes that away, so they needed, the people that backed it needed a state law to circumvent the legislature. So that's what Prop 64 is. It is, Prop 64 is designed to make MRSA constitutional.
Tell me a little bit. See, MRSA, of course, is a very significant situation now, because it's what the Board of Stupid Vipers, as I call our local board of supervisors, is using as its pretext for trying to ram through its latest version of local, I call it neo-prohibition here in marijuana.
Yep.
For cultivators. And last time they tried it last year, they got smacked down because they tried a much more sweeping ban, as I understand, on cultivation. And growers and supporters of growers and perhaps dispensaries, too, and maybe people generally got together to sign an initiative that essentially said a referendum, I guess it was, to overturn the action by the supervisors. And I've been suggesting to groups like Cannabis Advocates Alliance and others, people on the C4 committee, the group appointed by the supervisors to supposedly cook up a more liberal law or come up with recommendations from the community, that what the people who are really concerned about this should do is forget the supervisors and create their own law as to what they think should the voters should pass, and do it as an initiative locally. I mean, good luck in 2018. We've been seeing this stuff going on for decades, and you've been working on it for decades. But there actually was a success last summer. Now, maybe the same people who made that a success last summer are being bought off or are persuaded that they can live with the stuff the supervisors are doing, which essentially is adapting to what you're saying, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, MRSA and Proposition 64, which I think they anticipate will pass.
Yeah, well, and to back up a minute is, you know, Prop 64, they say they're going to free all these people from jail, but even the law enforcement is coming strong on that point that there's no one in California jails for growing six plants, and there's no one in California jails for possessing an ounce. That's all that Proposition 64 does is it legalizes an ounce that's already a misdemeanor. And six plants, well, no one's going to jail in California. There's over 1,500 people in California jails, but that sure ain't for six plants.
Well, would it release anybody from jail for other crimes that are involved with marijuana?
It could, but it's going to create 1,000 more crimes.
Is 1,000 an exaggeration? Or are you being rhetorical?
Well, again, for maybe it might release a few people, but then there's going to be hundreds and hundreds of thousands of patients that are no longer going to be able to get their notes, thereby are going to be felons, because anyone growing more than six plants per house is basically a felon and being able to lock up in jail for up to 6 months with all kinds of more heinous crimes that we're going to get into actually Saturday night.
Saturday night at the Loud Nelson Center between 6 and 9.
Yeah, so if I could touch on that. So Saturday night, Dennis Perrone, his husband John Entenwistle, hopefully Scott Emler, so three of the authors of Prop 215 are going to grace us with their presence. And Buddy Doozy, who's a really good friend of mine and was of Jack Harer's, is coming up from Semi Valley to give an in-depth analysis and a breakdown of Prop 64. So this Saturday, we're going to go through it to answer, you know, all these questions and way more. And we're going to have information so that people, when they leave, can share it. So this is going to be a teach-in for free Saturday night, 6 to 9, at the Lel Nelson with, you know, the people who authored Prop 215 who are completely encouraging everyone to vote no. And before, if you don't mind, then the spin doctors of Prop 64 say it's no, it's not going to affect medical marijuana, just like they said in Washington. Well, what Prop 64 does, because, again, this is a 62-page initiative. Like, how the heck are any of us...
Have you read it?
Yeah. How the heck are any of us supposed to understand all the intricate...
Do you understand it?
I do understand it. I'm not as well as some of the speakers Saturday, but my point is what it says is that these laws that they're writing, Prop 64, are not going to affect laws pertaining to the Compassionate Use Act. So it's a slippery way of saying these laws are not going to affect MRSA. It doesn't. Prop 64 explicitly doesn't say it's not going to negatively affect the Compassionate Use Act, which was Prop 215. It says it won't negatively affect the laws pertaining to, which is basically saying we're going to gut Prop 215 and we are going to instill recreation and we're going to give you something and we're going to take away a lot more.
We're talking with Mike Jolson, who is an untiring activist for legalizing marijuana, although I've heard this definitional back and forth about, well, legalizing means licensing. We don't want that. Just decriminalizing is a better way of putting it. And others have said, well, decriminalizing just means eliminating criminal status, but it doesn't mean... Anyway, you would like to see marijuana available to everyone who needs it or wants it. And this initiative that you're pressing for in 2018, anything more you want to say about it, what it would do?
Yeah, because language is crucial. And I've you know, coded language is what this Prop 64 is using. You know, that's been a term with this presidential election. It's a lot of coded language. Well, I think Prop 64 has a lot of coded language. But with the initiative we're proposing is, A, our goal is to stop 64, and then B, in 2018, propose this initiative. And this initiative, the language is, we decriminalize 99 female flowering plants and 12 pounds for personal use. That's what the initiative we're proposing does. It decriminalizes 12 pounds and 99 female flowering plant, and then it legalizes a recreational cannabis for commercial use, analogous to the beer and wine laws. So we, the California Hemp Initiative, we're not trying to create any new form of regulatory models. We're saying let's use the existing regulatory model, zoning, enforcing, licensing, that we already have with beer and wine. It's working relatively fine. We don't need to create some monstrosity, some bureaucracy that Gavin Newsom's going to run and dole out and write all these paychecks and create all this bureaucracy that's going to go mostly to enforce laws that won't even work.
So you are tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. I'm Robert, and Mike and I are discussing Proposition 64, the upcoming Adult Marijuana Use Act, or the Dump the Collectives and Smash Proposition 215 Act, as some might want to call it. And there is going to be an event coming up in two nights on Saturday night at the Loudoun Nelson Center in downtown Santa Cruz from 6 to 9, at where everybody can come in. I don't know if joints will be provided at the door.
Yeah, not there. But now I wanted to say one final point, and I forgot. But
you know, it's interesting. In Santa Cruz, we should probably talk about this on another show or another time, maybe another time this evening, who knows. But if you want to call in, if you have questions for Mike or comments or criticisms, I mean, we haven't really gotten to the real question, which I think people who are considering voting one way or the other are thinking, which is, what's the upside of Proposition 64? Because there is an upside. The upside, you know, and I know you were talking about the downside, but let's be honest with all the listeners in terms of how it would affect people who, for example, particularly my people I'm concerned about, or at least talk a lot about, poor people, homeless people, who can't go and get a $100 recommendation from a doctor and then go get a card for, you know, marijuana use at a state level, who don't happen to be lucky enough to be in Valerie Corral's Wham, but who, you know, have to worry about getting, you know, hassle for marijuana by the police, although they've been fairly liberal in Santa Cruz about that, I've been told, generally, though not about the right to sleep at night, which is another story entirely. So tell us, how would this impact poor people? Would 64 have any good effects, in your opinion?
No, because those poor people are going to be paying, you know, twice as much under the taxation that these people created, because if you look at the tax, they want to tax it like 30-40% with all these. So the poor person is going to be the brunt of Prop 64, plus the poor people that can't afford the permits are going to be the ones that are going to go to jail, while the people that can afford the permits aren't going to go to jail. So one of the leading groups against Prop 64 happens to be the Weed for Warriors, the veterans, because Prop 64 explicitly bans collectives, so there's no more giving away medical marijuana, and Prop 64 bans smoking in public, and it bans events for giving away cannabis for below cost. So High Times, the Emerald Cup, HempCon, all these cannabis chalice events will be 100% illegal, because A, there's no smoking in public, B, none of these companies can give away dabs or joints, so they're going to criminalize what we have, which is events where you can go and you can get free samples. And
well, the events will continue, just the free samples will be regulated to, buy them or something like that.
Yeah, but you can't smoke in public, so you won't effectively even be able to.
No, they'll have little places you can, they'll charge you to go inside to smoke.
Well, yeah, it's a horrible law. It's a horrible law that we need to reject. And if anything, know before you vote, and that's what our Saturday event, and we really want to replicate this event in other cities. And Dennis has actually been traveling. He was in Humboldt just recently. Dennis is out to really, educate folks.
Why so late? I mean, I went to a Cannabis Advocates Alliance meeting a couple weeks ago. I kept hearing from Pat Malo, there's good and there's bad in 64. I don't know. Most of us, we're not sure if we want to oppose it or not. Well, when we polled the people in the room, nobody supported 64. And so the CAA supposedly came out officially against Proposition 64 2 weeks ago. And yet, that's the Cannabis Advocates Alliance, I haven't heard shit about it from anybody, and I haven't seen much in the way of any kind of publicity. I mean, Dennis and other activists have known this thing is hitting the road for the last 2 or 3 months at least, right?
And that's, and you you hit on a valid point, and part of, what Buddy Doozy, who's our main speaker Saturday night, said was that people really never focus on the election till it's right out in front of them. So let me conclude with that. We need a critical mass. We need a social media storm, and it's happening against this because, Bernie Sanders came and he, spoke to thousands and thousands of people all across the country or across California. Well, we need to get the word out to millions and millions of people through in social media. We're winning. We're beating down Prop 64 on social media because people in the growing community that are breeders, growers, the patients understand the ramifications of what this bill will do. They see what's happening in Washington, and so we need. If you're on
what
social,
what are you talking about? What's happening in Washington?
Well, what's happening in Washington is that recreational cannabis has replaced medical cannabis. So medical cannabis clubs are being shut down, and growers are having to shrink. Yeah, it's Washington State.
Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Mike. Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, it sounds like we're talking about to Ray Lynn up there in Marysville?
Yes, Marysville, California. Yeah.
Okay. Have you been listening to the show?
I've been trying. I can't tune it in.
Okay, well, we've been talking about, and on this, the last 45 minutes, more or less, is Proposition 64, which you may know is the adult use of marijuana. What do poor people up there think? You're the mayor of the homeless, as you call yourself up there. What's your thought about that?
About marijuana?
About this Proposition 64, so-called adult use of marijuana. We got a number of speakers down here. They'll be talking in two nights who are really opposed to it, not because they don't like marijuana, but because they don't like what the authorities are going to do with marijuana once they get their teeth into it with this proposal. But what do people up there think? Do you have any sense of that? What do you think?
A lot of people are feeling that the medical marijuana has really been helpful to a lot of people that have, stomach problems and seizures, major headaches and stuff. And a lot of them are, let's go for it. Let's get it legalized because it's, a health thing up here because, the elevation and us being in the valley and.
I got you. But what the question here on this show is the proposal to legalize it that's coming up in a month, Proposition 64, it's called, a good one, or does it have some, is it worth voting down to look for a better one in 2018? That's really the issue that we're talking about in the studio here. Have any sense of that?
About the marijuana, right? Do you think that...
Raven, are you still there?
Yeah, I think that they're going to pass that here. They're going to get it through the local community, which is good. They don't want the big-based industries to get all the business. They want to get it localized where they can get some type of They figure, what, $35 billion or something by the year 2020? Then what part of that, I guess, cities do.
So what do you two plan to vote for 64 or against it, or do you have you made up your
yeah,
mind?
I'll vote for it for jobs. Yeah, it's going to put 100 jobs in this town.
And that's something we haven't discussed here yet. We probably should. But let me ask you about what you're calling in about. I know that you, and I'll have to ask Mike's indulgence here, because this is about the destruction of homeless encampments up there.
Is there any way you could put it a little bit louder?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's way better. Yeah.
Okay. I'm kissing the mic here. So what's the latest update? We talked a bit about you're getting pressure from the so-called social service providers and the cops to move from long-established encampments. I guess it's called Hollywood, you call your encampment up there?
That's correct. What has happened, as we're sitting speaking to you now, what has happened, they just ran over, I got video of it, of the encampment that they moved prior at Horseshoe, that they ran their stuff over with bulldozers. Well, today they bulldozed the rest of their stuff over by the encampment. The Union police officers came and ticketed them because they were too close to the tracks. But besides that, they just ran their stuff over, and there were people hiding in the bushes. They ran and just put it in a big old pile. And these are the people that were told to go over there by the police and the sheriff, and it was escorted over there on that property of trespassing. But that was the big thing that happened today, and they were supposed to be back tomorrow to clean it up with the bulldozer tomorrow.
So which camp was destroyed today?
The one that they had previously destroyed, the people there over at Horseshoe, which is down the road from us, 2 months ago, they gave them an illegal 1-day lawful detainer, and then ran their stuff over that. Next day, they escorted them like a caravan of gypsies over to this area that they ran over again today with the bulldozers.
And some of them they only gave us 3 days and told them to get out. Just like here at Hollywood on a private property, I talked to some folks today, and they said that they didn't even give them any kind of notice. They just gave them 3 days, and then they came in and just started plowing their stuff, crushing their homes, destroying their IDs, their pictures. They didn't even let them have time to get anything out.
Well, what I did today, Sue, I went for the Hollywood to see about the eviction process. They said in the paper, there's a big write-up on it today in the paper.
Hollywood countdown.
But they said that we were served back in March, and so I went in to get the evidence of the papers for the city to serve, and there's not been nobody served any papers. The papers were drawn up by the city's attorney.
How many people were impacted today by this destruction of a group that was forced out of Horseshoe 2 months ago and then got creamed again today?
Probably anywhere from 50 to 60 people. And they were in the bushes, literally, Robert. I had a guy come out. He said, I didn't know what to do. He said, so I just ran to the nearest bush as he watched his stuff get put up in a big old pile. I got all that on video aftermath, but I got what it looks like now. We will be sending that to my clothes, too, a couple of the videos.
And what percentage of these folks, if you have any clear sense of this, and be candid about it, I'm looking for, terror stories that are, exaggerated. What percentage of these folks are disabled, in your view?
Well, actually, physically, I don't know about the number about physical handicapped or, disabled people.
Let's see, there was 1, 2, 3, about 5 people.
About 5 people to get disabled. The rest of them, they probably qualify because they're real inherited social. They're elderly, like 55, 60, 65 years old. Have quite a few of those.
And now getting kind of rolling off to this topic that we've been talking about here and that's in the show for a bit, how many folks would you say use marijuana up there as either recreational or medicinal?
A good percentage of the town, you got to have to say.
80%?
Yeah.
Now,
when they use that, they're just happy, go lucky people. They don't go out causing problems.
Yeah, you don't have to convince me, Rylan. I'm a big fan of. Well, I'm not a big smoker, but I was one time a bigger smoker, and I'm a fan of accessibility to marijuana. But that's an issue which even the marijuana advocates, who even perhaps those who circulate petitions, The issue of access to low-income people for marijuana here in Santa Cruz is a problem like it is, I think, everywhere. As yeah. I've said before, you have to get a doctor's $100 statement, then you got to go get a card. And Mike, who's also here in the studio, and say hello to the folks, Mike.
Hi,
Mike.
Greetings, Greensville.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he tells me that the problem with Proposition 64, the legalization of marijuana in a very limited way, or actually it's a licensing of marijuana, is going to make the prices rise a lot because there will be so much taxing on the marijuana that people will have to pay a lot more for it. How hard is it for people up in Marysville who are poor to get marijuana, or is it just, you know, you go out and you grow your own or whatever?
It's just there. Well, it's just there, actually. I mean, it's not a if you don't got it or somebody does it, it's a real giving item, I would say, pretty much. What would you think, Rita?
Yeah. When we were doing our protest yesterday, some guy just pulled up and said, here, and handed it some out the car window.
Yeah.
It was really like, wow, okay, you know. I didn't know to accept it or what. I didn't know if I was going to get up or what was going on.
It's pretty free giving around here.
Yeah.
So there's not a problem of accessibility for poor people up there.
No, not really.
The problem is avoiding the police driving you out of your home and stealing all your possessions if you're
that's a real issue at this time, especially when they're doing it so illegal. I can't get no paperwork on the paperwork they printed. The official said that they're going to use the evictions for the code enforcement, but I can't get no papers for the detainers. I went to the city hall. I went to the courthouse. There's no documents that can support anything for me to even get an injunction because there's nothing that's been concrete. It's all been drawn up by, as the manager of the city council said, there's a lawyer. My advisable questions or my answers come from my lawyer. More or less.
Let me ask you this, Brian, and we're talking with Brian Brown, I believe. What's the question? It's on the edge of my mind here. Do you have much access to, you know, video equipment or just smartphones? Because one of the ways, I've talked to you about this before, and one of the ways that Mike Rhodes, who we talked about, the activist from Fresno, who's written the book Dispatches from the War Zone, and who I think says he's tried to get in touch with you. I don't know if he's gotten in touch with you yet.
Yeah, he has.
That's good.
One of the keys
to, you know, ultimately, rolling this back is documenting the abuses that are happening in a vivid, visual, clear way so that, you know, not just ordinary people can see it, which is important, I think, maybe even more important, but that so the attorneys, eager to get some money, will see this as a possibility of making funds off of civil rights lawsuits. You follow me?
Yeah, I can follow you. Yeah.
Is anyone documenting demolition activities?
Yes, we are.
Yes, and we have some other people in the other encampments where they, like, put everybody over there. They're going to start documenting. I guess tomorrow they're going to be coming, the railroad police, all with their bulldozers and start plowing people down that didn't move yet.
So we'll be there tomorrow. Yeah. I took the aftermath today, and then the one that happened on in June, I got an August 14th video of what it looked like afterwards, running down 12 elderberry state sacred trees. They just demolished the trees. They were large, huge elderberries, which are protected by the state. They just ran them over like the people. I got aftermath of that also.
Yes.
Well, what Rhodes describes, Mike Rhodes describes, as really being powerful for the court, the federal judge in Fresno, was the video of the police just casually throwing everything into large compacting machines, destroying people's valuables, throwing their survival gear away, and having them do so, you know, and getting really clear pictures of this being usable material that isn't trash, it isn't garbage, that's being dumped. Is any of that coming out of this?
Yeah, everything. The pile I seen today was stuff was like, that was their stuff.
Was their clothes.
Their clothes.
I've seen pictures of family members. I've seen little kids' toys. I mean, their shoes, everything.
Everything.
You've seen it, but did you get pictures of it?
You know?
You've seen it, but did you get pictures of it?
Yeah, I got them on my video. I was going to send them to you. I got my all my camera video. I got my camcorder working today, so that'll be my next one.
I'll have to ask our in-studio expert here. Have you ever had this problem with police? Have you ever been outside and suffered this kind of problem, Mike?
Not in that specific instance, no, but I feel for everyone that does.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty horrible.
My people, as I call them, they're pretty much in shock here.
This
is really weighing heavy on everybody up here, even the animals. I mean, I've seen a big difference, and I deal with these people every day. I see them. I go to their camps. I see what they need. I care for them so much, and that, you know, I see their animals even going through it, and I can tell when that animal is going through it because they don't come up to me like they normally did and when I go to their camp. And
by their animals, you mean like their dogs and their companions?
I gotta say something real quick. You know what happened yesterday? I was gonna tell you right off. There was a man that they're gonna pull the life support, I guess, on him tomorrow. But he was a transient man at a restaurant that was choking
at a store,
and everybody thought he was a transient. They didn't help him. Help came 15 minutes later, but it was too late. He was brain dead. But nobody would help him because he was a transient looking. Not a transient, but transient looking. So no, everybody just stood around watching him choke.
Yeah, and they're pulling the family, pulling them. Hold on.
And that happened yesterday.
Yeah, I hear you.
And to one of the girls that live here, it was her brother.
So one of the things you were telling me in a previous interview was the folks that are coming to demolish people's stuff and move them away aren't actually saying, we're going to put you in jail if you show up anywhere, but they're saying they want you to move further away. They want you to move further out of
town. They're wanting us to move out of the whole county.
Out of the county.
If we don't take their services that they're offering,
they're going to banish you out of the county.
And what services are those, Raylan?
They have these tiny houses up here, and that is through the consortium and Yuba Sutter consortium. But they have these tiny houses, and they have been putting people in it. A few people have went. I'm really surprised at who has gone. But they're trying to help. They're helping, like, get their cars registered and stuff like that.
Right.
But they're telling them,
now,
get your cars. We'll help you register them, and you just keep going.
Right. We were told there was going to be storage, but now there's really no facility to store. They're more or less just saying, get what you can, because they're going to run you over and throw the rest of it in the garbage. They've already put three dumpsters here as of the day before yesterday, three large ones. So I think they really plan on doing what they say they're going to do, but they're going to kill me.
Well, I hope not, man. So you say they're tiny houses. This came up at the Santa Cruz Shitty Council a couple of days ago.
They put them together.
I mean, Yuba City is supposedly a place where this is all happening, but do they actually have even this, you know, rudimentary pseudo housing available for everyone they're demolishing?
No, they're
only 40. They can only fit 40 people in at one time.
And 30 of them's already in.
Yeah,
and that's probably the couch surfers from town.
And there's probably about another 65, 70 people right here where we are. That's not going to have no place to go tomorrow.
Now, do people want to go into these tiny houses, or is it something that they don't want to do?
What was that question again?
Do people want to go into the tiny houses or not?
Some of them do, some of them don't. They're thinking of some kind of concentration camp. They're not sure what's really going on with the services.
Because they've been lied to so much.
Yeah, and they've been lied to, and I mean, these people are in shock up here. It's just,
What's your analysis, the two of you? Are these a hyper-controlled situation where people are being treated, you know, in a down-looking kind of way as less than, you know, like children or, you know, second-class citizens? Or are these tiny houses a good alternative, or is it some mixture of the two?
No, it's a barbaric act.
Yeah.
That's what I can't say. It's the human caring for humans.
They're taking all our civil and human rights away from us.
That's
and they're saying we more or less don't have nothing.
We don't deserve anything.
Yeah.
What's coming up in the next week? I'm sorry to be pushing you, but I'm against the clock here somewhat. What's happening in the next week that we should know about?
As of Monday, the bulldozers will be coming in. Tomorrow, the county, the people that on the consortium have a crew. They're going to be coming down tomorrow and helping people move. Well, they're moved to where? Because they don't have a place for us to move to. Where everybody else has been moving to, it's called the jungle on the other side of town. That's where everybody is. The railroad just gave all them people, made them move again. Those people are in shock. And the people that are here, they're not going to have a place. So some of them are going to be here, and Monday they're coming in with the bulldozers. And, like, they don't want us in town, but that's the only place
but
I can go is over that levee.
Now, look, I can't get an injunction until it has been accrued. I have that day.
They won't give me an injunction until an act's been done. Yeah, you mentioned that. So how can people get more information and get in touch with you if they want to either help or at least learn more about what's happening?
Same numbers. Tell me your number, your email.
My phone number is 530-415-8481. And my email is ethean.rb@gmail.com.
All right, I'll give you the last.
Or I have a blog. It's Raylan Butcher, the mayor.
Right.
Let me give you the last word now because I'm gonna roll on. Go ahead.
Okay.
You go ahead. Have we reached the end?
If there's anybody out there that can maybe make a visit up here and see for themselves that can help us out, I would really appreciate it because I'm like a stub. I'm only one person fighting for over 400 people. And it's really mentally, I'm not being able to handle it myself because I don't really know where to turn for the help that I need for these people. And I don't even want to go on a vacation, as I call it, to leave before I even know that these people are took care of because I'm their mayor and that's how they look at me and I love these people.
Alrighty, Mayor, we're going to leave it there and please keep calling in with reports, and we will keep giving you these little snippets of time, and we'll keep learning what's going on while you guys suffer through it.
Can I say one last thing?
Yeah.
If Homeland Security is listening out there, help.
They're probably the wrong person to talk to. But, hey, thank you both for talking. Brian Brown and Raylan Butcher, I believe, are the two folks we're talking to. Yeah? You take care.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Robert.
Thank you, Robert.
Hey, thank you. And you're hearing to Free Radio 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Mike Jolson's patiently been listening to and waiting, and we'll probably have to patiently listen to a lot more stuff because we kind of moved beyond this, but maybe the main subject he came to talk about. But if anybody wants to call in on these issues, Proposition 64, good or bad, will 215 be gutted? Are you going to be going to this event on Saturday between 6 and 9 to learn more from Dennis Perrone and company and our very own Scott Immler, who got a very bad rap the other decade? I guess he was accused of all kinds of things. That was years ago. Folks around may remember. Anyway, you can go and meet all these folks at 6 o'clock on Saturday at Loud Nelson Center. That'll be October 15th. I'm going to take a musical break, and I'll be right back. Mike, anything you want to say? You're welcome to hang, of course, if you wish.
Yeah, well, maybe just because I know like the folks that were just on probably don't know a lot about this specific legislation. So please Google No on Prop 64. And we do have a website. If you just Google it, it'll come up. It's a blog spot against Prop 64. But really, in conclusion, Google Monsanto and cannabis because Monsanto is buying up literally these growing and lighting companies like, Botanicare and Gavita Lights and I believe General Hydroponics. So what they're doing is Monsanto is poising themselves to take over an industry, and Prop 64 is legislation to benefit them.
And we may hear more about that, depending on Michael's patience. Because
I did want to touch on a point about that, so I'll wait for sure.
All right. 427-3772 is the call-in number, 427-3772. Call in if you got something you want to say, a question you want to ask, a grumble, a grouch, you name it. Wedding Bell Blues from the Fifth Dimension. So, coming up right now, if you happen to be downtown, the Museum of Art and History has a campus community event, I'm reading from one of their blurbs, to showcase the findings from a multimedia research project on the affordable housing crisis in Santa Cruz, which this is the kickoff event, apparently, for Affordable Housing Week. That's at the Museum of Art and History at 705 Front Street, the corner of Front and Cooper. If you know the downtown area, it's free. It's open to the public. It's even got simultaneous translation. I don't know, presumably Spanish and not other languages. But they're going to exhibit artwork and new digital tools, they write, focusing on how local residents experience the housing crisis and preliminary results. And this is the thing that interests me. I was reading about it in the Urinal, that is, say, the Santa Cruz Sentinel today, from a large-scale survey and interview project carried out by UCSC students in coordination with Community Bridges and other local community organizations in the Beach Flats. And this was about the rise in rents, which I think, I don't think much of blather about affordable housing, because it usually means building more housing for profit for real estate folks. And I've heard enough of this from City Council to make me send me running to their restrooms, except they close them because they say they're vandalized. That was the sign on the restroom Tuesday at City Council. Closed for vandalism. Ah, but it wasn't. It was open because there were the middle-class people who were coming to the City Council meeting. But the rest of the people who really need those restrooms during the day will find them locked with a little sign, "Go away, they've been vandalized." I don't think I need to say any more about that. But again, check out, if you're interested, the 7 to 9 o'clock event this evening. I'd be curious if you do to let me know. It's being run by the Working for Dignity program of the Center for Labor Studies, Critical Sustainabilities Project, and the Chicano Latino Research Center, and more, too, Division of Social Sciences. Also, tomorrow night, there are two events happening. There's the Free Radio Santa Cruz benefit for those of you who want to see us continuing to put out the kind of stuff you've been listening to for the last hour, and maybe for the last few years if you're a regular listener. We're going to be having a benefit at the Crepe Place, and I think it starts at 9 o'clock. I hope I'm not giving you too late a time. I'll double-check that again before the show winds down at 8. And there's also an event tomorrow night at the East Side Candidate Forum. It's going to be the Brant-Saforty Business Association and Action Committee, which are going to be asking city council candidates questions. I don't think much of the city council candidates, and probably don't think much of the questions they're going to ask them. According to this blurb, it's development impacts, Soquel Avenue, Water Mission and Ocean Streets Corridor, rezoning, neighborhood cut-through police, get-through traffic, but nothing about the police. No, nothing about the amount of money that's being spent on so-called public safety, which, of course, has to do with simply arming the police for Armageddon here in Santa Cruz and then sending them out after the most vulnerable people. And, of course, the drug war is a big part of that, as I'm sure Michael will agree. Then on Saturday, there is another series of events. Of course, during the day, all day, there's a UN festival where there'll be tables and folks setting up their literature stuff and probably some speakers. It's like it goes from 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock. I believe Huff and Food Not Bombs will be there, but this is primarily a more sort of establishment event. It's open, and that assumes it's not rained out, because I understand rain has been predicted for this weekend as well. That's going to be on Cooper Street between Front and Pacific, and that's going to be starting at 10 o'clock on Saturday. Then there's also an all-day-long tenant forum coming up as well, a series of tenant workshops and other tenant events. It's a tenant rally all day, and I want to give you the exact information on that. Hopefully I will. That's on Saturday. Let me give you more information on that in a moment. But on Friday, I've already mentioned the Free Radio Santa Cruz benefit at the Crepe Place, which is going to where we'll be celebrating our, I guess it's our 21st anniversary, 22nd, 21st, I believe, with a party and a benefit concert. And again, it is at 9 o'clock, Friday, October 14th, with Coffee Zombie Collective headlining the event. A local band, Dissiak, and DJ Kipley, one of our very own Free Radio folks. There is also, conflicting with us, or actually a little bit before us, at 7:30 at the Vets Hall, that's tomorrow night, there's a Sambada, a Farouche dance event with bubble artist Tom Noddy. You may remember Travelin' Tom. He's also an activist who supports street performers. And it's a benefit for the brand new Santa Cruz, as they call themselves, brand new Santa Cruz Council candidates. Those are Steve Schnard, Drew Glover, Sandra Brown, and Chris Krohn, but not Steve Plaich. In a way, in some respects, I prefer Plaich to these four, although not on all issues. It's an interesting question who to vote for if you believe in that kind of thing. And again, that's tomorrow at 7:30, Vets Hall, Samba da Benefit. That's Santa Cruz's, quote, hottest dance band, a fusion of Brazilian dance music and gypsy jazz funk, performing since 1998, joined by bubble artist Tom Noddy and gypsy jazz funk band Farouche. And again, you can go from at 7:30, then go over to the Free Radio thing at 9 o'clock. And there's still more, but waiting patiently to make an announcement and so to kind of follow up on some the Proposition 64 trashing that he's been doing is Mike Scholson. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, so Monsanto is buying up cannabis-growing companies like Botanicare and lighting companies, and under Prop 64, what they do is they wrote into their law the Industrial Hemp Act in California, which will allow for industrial hemp farmers in California under Prop 64, except that the industrial hemp farmers will have to grow very specific strains, and those strains can only be 1% THC. So that if a farmer under Prop 64 is going to grow industrial hemp, it has to be, if it tests higher than 1% THC, that they have to cut
their crop. Now, part of why this is bad is because that is so that they, the people that funded it, can literally control the seed, like Monsanto is trying to, does control other plants. They want to control the seed of industrial hemp. And the second reason why that is bad is because hemp, if we're going to grow hemp for paper, for fiber and fuel, we don't want the low THC. We want farmers to be able to grow the best strains for biomass fuel and the best strains for paper, fiber, not Monsanto-controlled industrial hemp. And again, tracing the money is because George Soros is one of the main funders of Prop 64, and George Soros also has still millions in Monsanto, who Monsanto is trying to take over or make a big dent in controlling the lighting companies and the cannabis growing companies.
Mike, you know, there was going to be a debate, I had thought, up on campus. UCSC, the Students for a Sensible Drug Policy, had a forum coming up, and I think that was, that was Saturday as well.
I think so. I hadn't heard anything about it, and they're still kind of shills for George Soros. George Soros funds drug policy, I mean, Students for Sensible Drug Policy, so these groups are, you know, sad to say, sort of shills for Soros and the Drug Policy Alliance, because Soros funds the Drug Policy Alliance, and Drug Policy Alliance funds, I believe, Students for Sensible Drug Policy. So I doubt it's going to be a debate, but you were going to read. But yeah, I mean, I would encourage people to go to UCSC to hear what these corporate shills have to say. But if people are really concerned about Prop 64 and the implications it has on basically taking away and destroying Prop 215, that's going to be our spin. You know, that the real information will definitely be Saturday at the Loudon Nelson. And you were going to read about Dennis Perrone, the article?
I was. I'm just, I want to make sure I give people an opportunity to ask, for example, to go to this event that's occurring now, if they want to, at the Museum of Art and History downtown at Front and Cooper Streets, if you want to check it out, or tomorrow the events that are happening. But, yeah, there's online you can find at the cannabis.co, there is an article, California Legalization, Prop 215 author fights 64. Here's why. Prop 64 is a misrepresentation of what marijuana is primarily for. Dennis Perrone, author 215, Proposition 215 to legalize medical marijuana nearly 20 years ago in California. Now he is fighting legalizing recreational marijuana. This is from Natalia Estrada of the Eureka Times Standard. For 20 years, Proposition 215 has sustained medical marijuana patients within California. That legislation, although not viable for change, could be challenged. According to Dennis Perrone, the original Proposition 215, California legalization pioneer. This week, Perrone is in Humboldt County, and that was, yeah, it is this week. I guess he's down here, too. Advocating against Proposition 64, the measure to legalize recreational cannabis. He believes the proposition is the government's way of extorting people and turning the marijuana industry into a profit-based culture, as you were saying, Mike, for big business instead of what he calls the honesty system, in which people use marijuana as a means of medicine and relief. I propose 215 to help sick and dying people at a time when cancer and AIDS patients are being criminalized for their medications. He said people in California are confused about the implications of Proposition 64, which calls for the regulation and taxation on cultivation through industry licensing and standardization of cannabis products. This law would also legalize marijuana under state law, but limit consumption for adults age 21 and older. That is something Perrone calls a step in the wrong direction, and said the law should allow the government to decide how, when, and why people could partake through their regulations. Sounds like that would be the wrong way to go. I'm not sure. Maybe she's misreading Perron. People don't realize, Perron continues, that money is a form of tyranny. You pay them and you won't get busted. That's how they control people, and this will force an even greater underground market to form, Perron said. Humboldt, according to Perron, would serve a large chunk of the underground market, and Prop 64 would solidify marijuana as a recreational drug instead of medical. The recreational categorization is something that Perron has fought to change since Prop 215's inception and over the past two decades. They made up recreational to demonize and trivialize the people who use marijuana. People who use cannabis for medicinal purposes aren't getting high, they're getting normal from the treatment, Perron said. Prop 64 is a misrepresentation of what marijuana is primarily for, and this kind of legislation will hurt a lot of people, especially small growers and businesses who are trying to provide to their clients but can't afford to because of the excess regulations and taxation on their products. Prior to 215, cultivation or possession of marijuana for medical treatment was prohibited, considered criminal. Under the proposed 64, Perron said local farmers and cultivators would be marginalized in the process of a large bureaucracy forming mediocre marijuana production from big business marijuana corporations. Voters need to be aware of the situation at hand, Perron said. 64 is not legalization. If it were legalizing, it would imply that marijuana is illegal, and it's not. This law would mean the displacement of cannabis farms in Humboldt. It essentially empowers profit instead of people. And there's more to the story. Check it out online at California, you can just Google for California legalization, Prop 215 author fights 64, here's why. And I found out by just going to California, Proposition 64, it's in the news. It's actually because of course, Dennis's high-profile name. And there's no on 64, as you mentioned, Mike.net.
Oh, yeah, and then there's Dragonfly, an activist from, I believe, in Sonoma. There's a blog spot if you just Google No KNOW on 64 Blogspot, you'll find a new consolidated website or a Blogspot website with documenting a lot of the reasons to vote no. So Saturday night we are going to video the event and we will have it up online. But one maybe final point to address is what I call the social media storm, you know, where for those that are on the social media, you can get more information on Instagram if you go to CCHI2018, that's on Instagram, or if you hashtag either on Facebook or on Instagram, no on Prop 64, or hashtag no on AUMA, we are beating down Prop 64 on social media because that's one of our strong points. So I do encourage on Facebook to look up some of these articles as well. And again, if you go to the Facebook California Cannabis Hemp Initiative 2018 page,
Mike,
you'll see.
Did you devote this much attention to defeating, I guess it was Proposition 19 in 2012?
In 2010, I didn't devote this much. That was right after a good friend of mine died, Jack Herer, Jack Herer had died.
I think Jack Herer died this
before
year.
That bill. So Jack was vehemently opposed to this, what's called a tax and regulate movement, and that's what Prop 64 is. It's tax and regulating without...
Get back to 2010. I was asking you that question.
So I didn't fight. I was definitely opposed to Prop 19. But we didn't have as sophisticated of weaponry, so to speak, as far as social media weaponry, because, you know, now Instagram is a way to get your word out to hundreds of thousands.
Well, that may be, but maybe I'm just too old fogey, wedded to ancient dinosaur print publications. But there's almost, any of the opposition to a proposition, a 64, has been from the right because the people don't want to have it legalized at all because it's going to kill our kids and all that sort of thing.
Right. Well, and to hit on that point is the law enforcement community that's opposed to Prop 64, there are some wonderful op-ed pieces where they hit it on the nail on the head because one of the
the police, I believe, up in San Francisco, said how Prop 64, it's literally written by people who have already said they want to be the Philip Morris of cannabis, and that's Justin Hartfield, the CEO of Weed Maps, which is given, I believe, $1 million or close to. So some of the law enforcement, you know, their opposition is based on, of course, reefer madness. However, a lot of people are seeing through this. And one final point is that for those that don't smoke or that cannabis isn't really an issue, but they are a human rights activist or an environmental activist or a sustainable activist or an activist against the corporatism or for human rights in general, that this issue is about stopping big corporations from controlling us and from controlling the earth, really.
Well, you know, I'm still trying to weigh the pros and the cons. I think you, you know, much as I think a lot of your arguments have merit, I think you also, in your passion to get this thing defeated, you know, you're suggesting there's absolutely no merit whatsoever in this bill. And there obviously is in some respects in that, you know, it will provide for just like legalization of a certain kind in Colorado and Washington has presumably cut back on even, you know, road accidents around.
Well, yeah,
you know.
I would say the merits of Prop 64 would be that we're going to hand over our hard-fought industry to big pharmaceuticals and
well,
to
Monsanto. Again, you're pounding the same nail
well,
with the same hammer instead of, unless you acknowledge some of the positive aspects that may be there, and people can still say, well, there are these positive aspects, but they're outweighed by the negative aspects. If you try to demonize everything about Proposition 64, you make people think that you are, you know, you're miswriting the situation.
Okay, yeah, and that's why earlier I said, for everything it gives you, it's going to take away.
But you aren't talking about what it gives you. See, that's the point. You aren't acknowledging that. You better acknowledge that if you want reasonable people who aren't already devotees
right.
of this. And pretty, you know, I mean, you're probably talking to a sympathizer here. But I want to see the whole argument. I don't want to just see here, you know, how bad it is. I want to know if there's any good in it and where that is, too, because that's what's selling it to people.
Well, yeah, I'd say if people want to find the good in it, go up to UCSC and listen to these people.
I wish I knew when that thing was.
That's going to be sometime up on campus by people who, I don't, Students for Sensible Drug Policy, I doubt is even a real organization up on campus. And there's no social media about the event, but I feel that they're, you know, that this proposition is 100% a step backwards, but I acknowledge with what you're saying is be open to, you know.
Right, but I think you need to do, you know, don't just send them up to somebody else. Say, well, there are three good things it would do. But, you know, you have to look at so heavily how bad it is, if that's your argument, which obviously it is, to really come to a decision. And you must also know that because of, I'm sure you're aware, that absentee voting means you're really in this late in the game. You know,
oh, yeah.
The votes are happening right now and will continue for, you know, for the next election, you know, the next couple of weeks until it comes in. I'll give you the last word.
Hey, well, and thank you. This is about corporatism. Know KNOW before you vote and find us on social media. We're the California Cannabis Hemp Initiative, CCHI 2018. And our website at the moment is cchi2016.org. So that's cchi2016.org. And thank you, Robert. Thank you, everyone, for listening, because our voice has yet to really be heard, like you said, so late in the game. So we have a big uphill battle and appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Mike, for letting us, you know what's cooking from your perspective.
Appreciate it.
Let's take a musical break here. I'm always running out of time, and I can never seem to find the love, so I got to keep working on it here. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Tomorrow night, 9 o'clock, great place. That's when we're doing our benefit. You got a tip for us on where to put up our antenna when it gets taken down within the next couple weeks, which is still on our, unfortunately, on our agenda. Give me a call at 423-4833. That's the line for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, also my home phone. Also, well, I'm a member of the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective, which you can be too. And I'll pass on the word. Any place that you know of that is has a kind of a line of sight into Santa Cruz where the antenna can reach the rest of us, the rest of you, everybody out there. And we'll pay for it. Not a lot, but enough to pay the bills and, you know, who knows, give you a couple cups of coffee besides. So get in touch. You can also reach us online at freakradio.org, freakradio.org. And you can learn more about us tomorrow night at the Crepe Place. Crepe Place is Seabright and Soquel, more or less. I think it's the actual address. I was reading a few minutes ago, and I could find it again, I think. It is just says the Crepe Place. Damn. Well, the Crepe Place it is. I hope you find it. it's about a quarter of a block from the Seabright and Soquel intersection across the street from the Rio Theater. So check it out. Down a little bit towards Santa Cruz on the other side of the street. So I was going to play some more from Mike Rhodes, author of Dispatches from the War Zone, the Fresno writer and community activist who helped Fresno homeless and attorneys squeeze $2.3 million out of the city of Fresno for its destruction of homeless property and, actually more important, allowed for people to survive in their homeless encampments for about 5 years from 2007 to 2012, maybe 2013, when the city again began its crackdown activities. He came to Santa Cruz last week and spoke with us. I played a little bit of his speech on Sunday when he read from his book, Dispatches from the War Zone. I was going to read a little more, but I don't have a lot of time. Instead, I'm going to give you this update he sent me by email. I think it was today, might have been yesterday. He has gotten in touch with the Marysville activists we talked to earlier, Brian and Raylin. I'll get it right one of these days. And he's trying to look into what's going on with the demolitions up there. And he talks a little bit about the book tour that he was on, because that's what he was doing. The ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, was sponsoring his tour. They were using the tour to figure out who in the local chapters were interested in the homeless issue, what specific problems were happening in each community, and what next steps would be taken. And he thinks that they were assessing the strengths and weaknesses of the ACLU local chapters throughout the region and gave the someone, I guess an ACLU person, not able to attend the Santa Cruz event, insight into what's happening and how capable they are to organize an event and do outreach. She's the chairman of the organizing department within the ACLU of Northern California. More important than any of this ACLU blather, each stop on the tour, Mike writes, was unique. We started in Humboldt, where Pam and I, that's his wife, arrived a day early so local organizers could give me an orientation about what was going on. We went into Eureka and talked with a lot of homeless folks about what was going on, went to a couple of social service centers where I got to talk with a woman who had established a facility based on shipping containers. Which is where I keep books myself and magazines, storage shipping container. But apparently they're keeping people in them up in Eureka. When I walked in, I took a photo and was immediately, Mike Rhodes writes, set upon by a staff person who told me to stop and that I had to leave. I did not leave, and that resulted in the director, an Asian woman, coming over to make sure that I was not going to get into any more trouble. She seemed like a pretty typical poverty pimp. I thought I was one of the few people who used that phrase. this side of the revolution, who had set up a facility that gave the city some cover so they could say homeless people have a place to go while providing some pretty shitty containers for people to live in. It reminded me a lot of Poverello House, which is a place in Fresno, and their tool sheds, which are places that are baking in the summer and freezing in the winter and supposedly housing for homeless people. We ran into vigilantes at an event in Reading and lots of social service workers in Chico. I was told before I arrived at the Chico event that the social service workers, they were directors of two different projects, thought I was too radical and anti-establishment, so they met before the event and figured out a way to do an event where they were not at each other's throats. And Monterey had a good crowd, but no homeless people, although he hears there are lots of homeless people in the Monterey area. And that's kind of the update from Mike Rhodes. Not necessarily the most thrilling update, and probably should have edited that a bit. But here's an interesting audio that's I've been intending to play. Oh, I should first mention before I do, this is an audio about the defending the right to fight the police if you are defending yourself in a situation where you're doing nothing wrong. Always a really dicey situation. But before I get into that, I want to say this afternoon I attended the trial, if you can call it that, of Alex Skelton and Joff Jones, known in court as Jonathan Jones. These are the two painters who on Pacific Avenue were arrested five different times for displaying their artwork on the sidewalk outside the constrictive performance pens or little blue brass boxes. They were they're marked with blue marks and then the and little brass discs where you're allowed to be if you want to engage in free speech activity involving a so-called display device. And they were charged with violating the part of the law that said they were outside the blue boxes. And they came in at 1:30. I think their trial began around 3:30, maybe a little bit earlier. And they had this a city attorney there, Cassie, and Sergeant John Bush, who I guess was the chief arresting officer. And Alex is quite an articulate, rapid, and unquenchable speaker. If you've ever seen him on the streets, I've actually interviewed him on occasion, and will probably do so again. Didn't really have the time or energy or the motivation, really, to interview him after this latest round in the courts. There was no decision yet. The trial is ongoing. It will continue tomorrow at 9 in the morning in Department 10 in the basement of the county building right next to the courts. That's the one little isolated court that's in the basement next to the law library of the five-story county building, if you know where that is, if you want to go there and check out how things are going with Alex and Joff. They put out no publicity about their trial that I know of, nor have I, partially because I'm preoccupied with other things, partially because when I did put out publicity, I was kind of I was criticized by them for doing it, which really doesn't really bother me because sometimes the wishes of some people who are engaging in their own legal strategies conflicts with my assessment of what the general good is, which is to know what's going on. That's what I do with the show. So that's okay. In any case, what happened was the judge, who is a commissioner, whose name is Kim Basket, who I call Basement Level Basket or Basket Case Basket, a derogatory name that sort of indicates a real sort of lack of confidence isn't the word. She is a fundraising machine for the county and to some extent for the city, though I don't know much the city gets out of all this. It's really depressing to see her in operation as she acts like she's engaging in protecting people's rights and then cuts them off at the knees. Alex prepared a very lengthy set of exhibits and arguments, and almost all of them were ruled irrelevant or hearsay or lacking foundation or cumulative. These are phrases used in legal jargon by attorneys and judges when they are trying to stop each other from presenting arguments to the court or evidence to the court. But the real problem was not so much the decisions, though, that were very bad, because almost nothing is left of the case. That's in my opinion, although Alex disagrees with me. He seemed very cheery, and he seems to feel he's going to win this case, which I would be thunderstruck if he did. And if he does, more power to him. But I don't really like the individual strategy where somebody goes off on their own and tries to win something isolated from the rest of the community and the rest of the people on Pacific Avenue are fighting this fight. It's not entirely true to say Alex and Joff are isolated. They've been supporters of other performers there and other vendors and activists. But they've been very tight-lipped about their trial because they somehow have this entirely misplaced faith in the legal system there. They don't... they think they're dealing with someone who has a fundamental sympathy for the Constitution. That's their rather... I think that has to be their view of Commissioner Baskett. Anyway, the thing about Baskett in this particular hearing this afternoon, which is the issue in the trial for these two, is a law that makes it illegal for you to be outside these blue boxes. And they tried to present a lot of other laws for the court to consider that preyed upon, restricted, and suffocated basic First Amendment rights in Santa Cruz for performers and artists and people trying to use public spaces generally. And they're quite right. All their arguments are right, but they have nothing to do with winning a legal case in the legal game that they're playing, and that's the problem for the two of them, that they don't understand, in my view. And we'll see if simply making reasonable arguments to the court, which they already made in their lengthy papers, will actually win the day and win the hearts, the heart, because there's no jury in this case, it's a case before a judge, of Commissioner Baskett. You can find out yourself. Be present, 9 o'clock, basement of the County Building Department 10 tomorrow morning, and check it out. And if you do, let me know how it goes. I spent 2 hours there today, and I'm probably not going to make it tomorrow. But I hope somebody does, to keep an eye and an ear on what's going on down there. And what's going on the streets, which is just as important, probably more important than what's going on in that court, since what's going on in the court is quite predictable, I think, unfortunately. The other thing about this whole case with the Commissioner Baskett and these two artists was that the artists were facing this city attorney, a woman who kept objecting to every document they presented. But the thing about the judge, instead of being a neutral party and requiring the city attorney to prove her case in terms of at least not coaching her, she acted like she was a primary coach or part of the prosecution team. She made, when the city attorney didn't make objections, she made objections. And there were a couple of documents that stayed in. But out of, I guess it was 20 or 30 exhibits and 20 or 30 defense arguments, and I've got the numbers wrong, but it's, somewhere in that range, a handful were left standing at the end, and those are only arguments that she will consider before she finds them and tosses the case, into the collection box, in my view. But we'll see. You never can tell what's going to happen there. Let's see if I can get this. Bit of audio to work. And we'll see what we will see here. At issue is defending the right to fight police. Phil Mathier talks with San Francisco Public Defender Jeff Adachi, who is representing a man accused of assaulting BART police officers at the Embarcadero station in July of this year. And we'll see how this plays out, if it does at all. It's queuing up. And it may come on. Let's hope it does. And while it does, it has to cycle through a number of ads. Let's... There we go. Or maybe not.
You're sending that to college?
And he's getting him a brand new Honda Civic.
What? Not used?
Well, the kid needs the technology. And...
So, unfortunately, this is the ad that precedes the video, but we'll get past the ad and hit the video shortly. Again, at issue, defending the right to fight the police. And here we go. Today.
The trial of a man accused of assaulting BART police officers is about to get underway. Witnesses recorded cell phone video of the incident back in July at the Embarcadero BART station in San Francisco. Police got a call of a possible attempted robbery. They tried to question Michael Smith, but say he was combative and resisted arrest, even biting an officer at one point. During the trial, jurors may see footage from the officer's body cameras.
Joining us now to talk about this is public defender Jeff Adachi, who is representing Smith in the case. And you plan to argue that basically the defendant, the guy on the ground, was acting in self-defense?
Well, he had a right to defend himself. This is a situation where he got off the train. He had done nothing wrong. There was a false report that he had committed a robbery, which was completely untrue. And the officers don't explain why they're trying to stop him. They go up him with guns. They sweep him to the ground. His face hits the concrete, and they jump on top of him.
Okay, but once he's there on top of him and that happens, under what right or what logic is it for him to continue to resist and to fight back? I mean, that seems like he's putting himself in jeopardy.
Well, the law says that when an officer uses unreasonable force,
The video is a little choppy, but bear with us here, folks.
Force is what they did here. And they, you know, he's not resisting. And they're on top of him. They have their knees in his back. And they're essentially using force against him unlawfully. And he is simply trying to defend himself in that situation. Keep in mind here, they don't even tell him why they're stopping him. So they're violating their own protocol. And we have body camera video that shows that the officers didn't follow.
No, I can understand that. But given today's nature, and we're seeing story after story from Charlotte to Tulsa, Baltimore, name the city, here in San Francisco.
And there are people being killed.
Right.
By officers.
But oftentimes it is a situation that starts one way and then escalates. And you, I'm just curious if you are saying that's okay.
Well, if it's the officers that are escalating the situation by using too much force, the citizen has a right to defend themselves against that. Otherwise, what happens?
You know, I have a right in California to step out into traffic and expect it to stop. But if I do and I get hit, I'm the one that's hurt.
Right.
So I'm just wondering, if given today's environment, because what you're doing here is you're putting the BART police on trial and you're putting their methods on trial. And the whole idea of confrontation between police and civilians, particularly African-Americans, is the issue we're dealing with here. So I'm trying to figure out where you think the line is.
For example, my client doesn't resist at all until they throw his girlfriend on the ground who's pregnant. And the officer's on top of her. She's telling the officer, I'm pregnant. He's saying, she's pregnant. And they're on top of her. And they don't change anything. And so in that situation, what would you do? Would you just sit there and say, you know what, you're a police officer, go ahead and throw a pregnant woman
probably,
to the ground?
Yes, I probably would say, and I'm going to sit your backside off down the line. But right now, and given this situation and the fact that you do have guns, I think I'm going to just spread eagle and calm down.
But was it reasonable for him then to try to tell the officers to get off his pregnant girlfriend? And the answer is yes, and I think a jury will understand that.
And that's what's going to be very interesting, because this is, like I said, a groundbreaking case. Who else would do it but Jeff Adachi? And I'm going to have you after the verdict to follow
up
on this, because this is a whole new arena. Thank you for joining us this morning.
And that was actually about 2 weeks ago. So there may have been a resolution in this case, which I will look into, and maybe we'll hear more about that, or you can go online to find out more about that. I'll be back on Sunday. 9:30 is when my show begins, and usually runs late to 1:32, sometimes even 2:30. So you can check me out then. We better get rid of the Honda advertisement there. The regular show that Dennis, Uncle Dennis, does will not be shown tonight. Will not be played tonight. He's not coming into the studio, is another way of putting it. I'm not sure what he's doing or where he's going, but he's... you may have heard him. He called in rather abruptly earlier in the show and let us know that he had to be elsewhere. So I'm going to be putting on an old show, and hopefully you'll enjoy it anyway, even in Dennis's absence. He does. He's been doing this almost as long as I have, for 20 years now. I'm not sure if he's going to be in town tomorrow night for the Free Radio Santa Cruz benefit. He may be. That's going to be again at 9 o'clock at the Crepe Place on Soquel near Seabright. And I think they're going to charge if they can. I don't know how free it is if you haven't got any money, because we're trying to make money. But you probably can slip in. I can't speak authoritatively about that. It's not too clear to me, not in the inner circle of planning the event. But there's also an interesting story, well, actually, kind of boring story, actually, but a story that at least mentions Free Radio Santa Cruz in the good times today. Actually, it came out yesterday or the day before. It's in this week's issue. So if you're interested in checking it out, do so. I'm going to turn, before we completely end the show, to the streets where Pacific Avenue life lies, and a little of it gets recorded when I wander the street. So let's hear some of this.
So I count three disc spots, three performance allowed zones, exempt areas, exempt from complete criminalization. Hey, guys. In front of Forever 21. I think there's only one or two across the street. And I hear music coming down here in Pacific Avenue. It's about 8:15.
And this is me about a week ago, checking out the number of places available for performers, and what is, you may know if you walk down Pacific Avenue, a very broad sidewalk with very, very limited space for performers and for people who want to set up a table. Intentionally, severely reduced again and again and again by successive city councils, with no justification of any systematic problems, but just what I call the right-wing riptide rolling in and enforcing its own cultural standards, its own aesthetic repression on street culture, its own attempt to drive poor people out of sight and out of town, mostly out of sight. I don't mind if you're in town, as long as they don't have to see you or smell you or hear you. And there are only three spots where you can be near the very long area in front of Forever 21. What that means is if you're there for an hour, then you've got to move completely away from that area, because you have to be at least 100 feet away, which puts you beyond any of those three spots. So it really limits the time any person can be downtown to 1 or 2 hours if they want to be legal. Now, police, to their credit, or perhaps because they're just tired of this stuff, or perhaps because they're afraid of insurrection from below, that seems less likely, have not been seriously or rigorously enforcing it unless they don't like you. But is this any way, you know, to run a railroad? Is this any way to run a society to require you will only get just treatment if you tickle the fancy of a man in an armed, in a uniform, in body armor with a gun and a taser? I mean, it's pretty sickening, actually. And that was one of the things I was thinking of as I sat on the front row in Commissioner Baskett's court in the Alex and Joff case earlier this afternoon, is that this is the part of the whole machine that grinds people up, beginning with the police department's sort of street terrorism, because that's a lot of how this operates. They couldn't operate if they really had to start ticketing and arresting everyone who was involved in violating these ordinances. So they just scare people. And that, to me, is a way of snuffing the human spirit. And it really doesn't go over well with me.
8:30. One spot in front of Dale Williams Schuler's. A total of four spots on this side of the street. Again, large open spaces with no spots. And we have the usual band of vagabond musicians playing in front of the Palomar, as well as our Catman. Cooper, okay. Ricardo, hey guys. It's a guitar, two guitars, a mandolin, looks like a mandolin, three guitars, a tambourine, and a few people listening.
Never heard a note that a tree